We approach Koros in silence, trying to march in step. Cal flanks Nanny, one fist permanently clenched at his side, while I trail just behind, with Cameron on my left and Shade on the right. Farley and Killorn keep to the center of the formation, never letting go of their guns. The air itself seems electrified, coursing with danger. It is not death I fear. Not anymore. I've faced dying too many times to be afraid of it. But the prison itself, the thought of being captured, forced into chains, turned into the Queen's mindless puppet, that I cannot bear. I would rather die 100 times than face such a fate. So would any of us. Your Highness, one of the soldiers says, daring to look up at the person he believes to be king. The badge on his breast, 3 crossed swords in red metal, mark him as a captain. The bars on his shoulders, bright red and blue, can only be his house colors. House Ural. Welcome to Koros Prison. As instructed, Nanny looks straight through him, waving one pale hand in dismissal. That should be enough to convince anyone of her supposed identity. But as the soldiers stand, the captain's eyes flick over us, noting our own uniforms, and the lack of sentinels accompanying the royal sovereign. He hesitates on Cal, one razored glance focusing on his helmet. He says nothing, however, and his soldiers fall into formation next to us, their footsteps echoing with ours. Haven, Osanos, Provos, Macanthos, Igri. I note the familiar colors on a few uniforms. The last, House Igri, the House of Eyes, is our first target. I tug on Cameron's sleeve, nodding gently toward the bearded blonde man with darting eyes and white and black stripes on his shoulder. She inclines her head and her fists ball at her sides in quiet concentration. The raid has begun. The captain takes Nanny's other side, stepping in front of me so smoothly I barely notice. A silk. He has the same tanned skin, gleaming black hair and angled features of Sonia Ural and her grandmother, the sleekly dangerous panther. I can only hope the captain is not so talented as intrigue as she is, or else this is going to be much more difficult than expected. Your specifications are nearly completed, Your Highness, he says. There's a prickling air to his words. Every cell block is individually sealed, as instructed, and the next shipment of Silent Stone arrives tomorrow with the new unit of guards. Good, Nanny replies, sounding uninterested. Her pace quickens a little, and the captain adjusts in kind, keeping up with her. Cal does the same, and we follow. It looks like a chase. While the security center of Harbor Bay was a beautiful structure, a vision of carved stone and sparkling glass, Koros is as gray and hopeless as the waste around it. Only the entrance, a single black iron door set flush against the wall, breaks the monotony of the prison. No hinges, no lock or handle. The door looks like an abyss, like a gaping mouth. But I feel electricity bleeding around the edges, originating from a small square panel set next to it. The key switch. Just like Cameron said. The key itself dangles from a black chain at Ural's neck, but he doesn't pull it loose. There are cameras, too. Beady little eyes trained on the door. They don't bother me in the slightest. I care more about the silk captain and his soldiers, who have us surrounded and keep us marching forward. I'm afraid I don't know you, pilot, or the rest of you for that matter, the captain prods, leaning so he can see past Nanny and fix Cal with a flint-eyed stare. Would you identify yourself? I clench my fist to keep my fingers from shaking. Cal does no such thing and barely turns his head, reluctant to even acknowledge the prison captain. Pilot suits me fine, Captain Ural. Ural bristles, as expected. The Koros facility is under my command and protection, pilot. If you think I'm going to let you inside without what, captain? Every word out of Nanny's mouth cuts like a knife, slicing through the deepest parts of me. The captain stops cold and flushes silver, swallowing an ill-advised retort. Last I checked, Kuros belongs to Norta. And who does Norta belong to? I am only doing my job, Your Highness. He sputters, but the battle is already lost. He puts a hand to his heart, again, saluting. The Queen charged me with defense of this prison, and I only wish to obey her commands as well as yours. Nanny nods. Then I command you to open the door. He bows his head, giving way. One of his soldiers, an older woman with a severe silver braid and square jaw, steps forward, laying one hand on the iron door. I don't need the black and silver stripes on her shoulder to know she's of House Samos. The iron shifts beneath her magnetron touch, splintering into jagged pieces that react with sharp efficiency. A blast of cold air hits us head-on, smelling faintly of damp and something sour. Blood. But the entrance hall beyond is made of stark, blinding white tiles, each one without a hint of stain. Nanny is the first to step inside, and we follow. Next to me, Cameron trembles, and I nudge her softly. I would hold her hand if I could. I can only imagine how terrible this must be. I would tear myself apart before returning to Archeon. And yet, she returns to her own prison for me. The entrance is strangely empty. No pictures of Maven, no banners. This place has no one to impress, and needs no decoration. There are only whirring cameras. Captain Eral's soldiers quickly retake their posts, flanking each of the four doors around us. The one behind, the black, shuts with the ear-splitting screech of metal sliding against metal. The doors to the left and right are painted silver and gleam in the harsh prison light. The one ahead, the one we must pass through, is a sickening blood red. But Eral stops short, gesturing to one of the silver doors. I assume you'd like to see Her Highness, the Queen. I am very glad for our helmets, or else the captain would see horror on every single face. Ilara is here? My stomach flips at the thought of facing her, and I'm almost sick inside my helmet. Even Nanny pales and her voice sticks, despite her best efforts. I feel Killorn at my back, inches from me. He is silent, but I hear his meaning all the same. Run, run, run. But running is not something I can do anymore. Her Highness is here? Cal bites out. For a second, I'm afraid he's forgotten himself. Still? He adds. The afterthought of a lie. But suspicion flares in the captain all the same. I see it like an explosion in his eyes. Blessed Nanny laughs aloud, her forced chuckle cold and detached. Mother has always done as she likes, you know this, she says to Cal, scolding him. But I am here on other business, Captain. No need to bother her. The captain offers up an obliging smile. It pulls at his face like a sneer, twisting his fine features into something ugly. Very well, sir. Killorn taps my arm, his touch urgent. He sees what I see. The captain no longer believes us. Turning, I take Cameron by the elbow and squeeze. Her neck signal. Under my touch, her muscles tighten. She's pouring everything she has into blocking Igri's ability to keep him from seeing what's coming. Confusion crosses his face, but he shakes it off, trying to focus on us. He doesn't understand what's happening to him. And what have you come here to do? Eral presses on, still wearing his pointed demon grin. He takes one languid step toward us. It will be his last. Remove your helmets, if you please. No, I tell him. With an easy breath, I take hold of the cameras pointed down at all of us. As Eral opens his mouth to shout, I exhale and the cameras explode into a twist of sparks like fireworks. The lights go next, flashing on and off, plunging us into pitch black and striking brightness in succession. We are prepared for this. The soldiers of Kuros are not. Flame races along the tile, casting strange, dancing light across the white. It bars every door, jumping up to the ceiling, effectively locking the soldiers in with us in the flickering darkness. The Osano soldier, a nymph, hastily leeches moisture from the air, but not enough to combat Cal's crackling fire. A stone skin rushes at me, his flesh turning to rock before my eyes, but he hits the wall, known as Nix Marston. Darmian joins in, and the two invulnerable new bloods set to taking the soldier apart. The others fare just as well. Ketha obliterates the provost Telki, planting an explosion in his heart that rips him from the inside out. The Haven soldier does her best to combat my darkness, using her ability to collapse the shadows, pooling them into a black mist that suddenly erupts with blinding, brilliant light. Even our helmets do nothing to stop the glare, and I have to shut my eyes. When I open them, the Haven is on the ground, with a deep gash in her neck. She coughs silver blood onto the tile, and my brother stands over her, knife in hand. Behind him, Igri drops to his knees, clutching his head and screaming. I can't see! He weeps, tearing at his own eyes. Blood joins his painful tears. I can't see anything! What's happening? What is this? What are you? He shouts to no one. Cameron is the first to pull off her helmet. She has never killed a man before, not even in her escape. I see it all over her face, in the horror twisting through her, but she doesn't let go. Out of bravery or malice, I can't say. Her silence takes hold until the man on the ground stops crying, stops clawing, stops breathing. He dies with his eyes wide open, staring at nothing, blind and deaf in his last moments. It must feel like being buried alive. It's over in a minute or so. 12 silver soldiers dead on the tile, some burned, some electrocuted, some shot, some with their heads bashed in. Ketha's kills are the messiest. An entire wall is splattered with her handiwork, and she pants noisily, trying not to look at what she's done. Her explosive ability is gruesome at best. Only Lori is wounded, having taken on the magnetron with Gareth. She got a shard of metal in the arm, but nothing too bad. Farley is the first to her side and pulls out the makeshift blade, letting it clatter to the floor. Lori doesn't so much as grunt in pain. "We forgot bandages," Farley mutters, putting one hand over the bleeding cut. "You forgot bandages," Ada replies, pulling a small swatch of white fabric from inside her suit. She expertly ties it around Lori's arm. It stains in an instant. Killorn chuckles to himself, the only one to enjoy a joke at a time like this. To my relief, he looks perfectly all right, focusing on reloading his gun. The barrel smokes, and there are at least two bodies riddled with his bullets. Anyone else would think him unaffected, but I know better. Despite the laughter, Killorn finds no joy in this bloody work. Neither does Cal. He bends over the dead Captain Eral, gingerly taking the black key from his neck. "I won't kill them," he told me once, before we stormed the security center of Harbor Bay. He broke his own promise, and it's wounded him more deeply than any battle. "Nanny," he mutters, unable to look away from Eral. With shaking fingers, he closes the captain's eyes forever. Behind him, Nanny focuses on Eral's face, staring at him. It only takes a moment before her features match his own, and I breathe a small sigh of relief. Even a fake maven is nearly too much for me to bear. A hiss of static crackles at Eral's belt. His radio, the command center, attempting contact. "Captain Eral." "Captain, what's going on down there? We lost visual." "Just a malfunction," Nanny replies with Eral's voice. "Might spread, might not." "Received, Captain." Cameron tears her eyes away from the dead Igri. She lays a hand on the red door. "This way," she says, almost inaudible, over the drip of blood and the sighs of the dying. I feel the prison's command center like a nerve, pulsing, controlling all the cameras in the facility. It pulls at me, dragging me through the sharp turns of its hallways. The corridors are white tile, just like the entrance, but not so clean. If I look closely, I can see blood between the tiles, turned brown by time. Someone tried to wash away whatever happened, but they weren't thorough enough. Red blood is so hard to clean up. I see the queen in this, in whatever nightmare she's concocted deep in the bowels of Koros. She's here, somewhere, continuing her frightening work. She might even be coming for us now, alerted to a disturbance. I hope she is. I hope she turns the corner right now, so I can kill her. But instead of Queen Alara, we round the bend to find another door, with a large D on it, and no lock. Cameron runs to it, her knife in hand, and gets to work prying at the switch panel. It comes loose in a second, and her fingers plunge into the wiring. "We have to go through here to get to command," she says, jerking her head at the door. "There are two magnetron guards inside. Be ready." Cal quietly clears his throat, dangling the key in front of her. "Oh," she grumbles, flushing, and takes it from his hand. With a scowl, she jams it into the corresponding slot on the switch. "Tell me when." "Gareth," Cal begins, but he's already stepped forward, bracing himself against the metal door. Nanny takes his side, still disguised as Captain Eral. They both know what they must do. The others are not so sure. Ketha looks on the edge of tears, her hands twitching up and down her arms, as if she's afraid she's lost a limb. Farley reaches out, only to be batted away. My heart sinks when I realize I don't know how to comfort Ketha. Does she need a hug or a slap? "Watch our backs," I bark at her, electing what I hope is the happy medium. She shivers, glaring at me. Her braid has come undone, and she tugs at the strands of dark hair. Slowly she nods, turning on the spot to watch the empty corridor behind us. Her sniffles echo off the tile. "No more," she murmurs, but she holds her ground. Darmian and Nix take her side, more in a show of solidarity than strength. At least they'll make a very good wall when the guards realize what's happening up here, which should be soon. Cal knows the urgency as well as I do. "Now," he says, and flattens himself against the wall with the rest of us. The key turns. I feel the electricity jump in the switch and flood the door's mechanism. It flies open, screeching back into the wall to reveal a cavernous cell block. In stark contrast to the white tile corridors, the cells are gray, cold, and dirty. Water drips somewhere, and the air is sickly damp. Four levels of cells reach down into the gloom, one stacked on top of the other, with no landings or stairs connecting the sets. Four cameras, one in each corner of the ceiling, watch over all. I shut them off with ease. The only light is a harsh, flickering yellow, though the small skylight above has gone blue, betraying the rising sun. Standing beneath it, on a single catwalk made of gleaming reflective metal, are two magnetrons in gray uniforms. Both of them spin at the sound of approach. "What are you?" the first says, taking a single step toward us. He has Samos colors on his uniform. He freezes at the sight of Nanny, standing at Gareth's shoulder. "Captain Eral, sir." With a wave of his hand, the Samos magnetron officer raises flat sheets of metal from the block floor, constructing a new section of catwalk before our eyes. It connects to his, allowing Gareth and Nanny to walk forward. "Fresh blood?" the other officer chuckles, nodding at Gareth with a sly grin. "What legion are you out of?" Nanny cuts in before Gareth can answer. "Open the cells. It's time for a walk." To our chagrin, the officers exchanged confused glances. "We just walked them yesterday. They're not due for orders or orders. Then I have mine," Nanny replies. She raises Eral's key, dangling it in open threat. "Open the cells." "So it's true? The king's back again?" Samos asks, shaking his head. "No wonder everyone's in an uproar back at command. Got to look sharp for the crown, I guess, especially with his mother still skulking around." "She's a strange one, the queen," the other says, scratching his chin. "Don't know what she does in the well. Don't want to know, either." "The cells," Nanny repeats, her voice hard. "All right, sir," the first magnetron grumbles. He elbows the other and they turn together, facing the dozens of cells rising from floor to ceiling. Many are empty, but some hold shadows languishing under the crush of silent stone. New blood prisoners, about to be let loose. More catwalk clangs into place, the sound like a giant hammer beating a wall of aluminum. They line the cells, creating walkways around the perimeter of the block, while more sheets twist and fold into steps to connect the levels. For a moment, I'm seized by a sense of wonder. I've only seen magnetrons in battle, using their abilities to kill and destroy, never to create. It's not hard to imagine them designing air jets and luxurious transports, curving jagged iron into smooth arcs of razor-thin beauty, or even the metal dresses Evangeline was so fond of. Even now, I admit they were magnificent, though the girl wearing them was a monster. But when the bars of every cell yawn open, causing the people inside to stir, I forget all my wonder and amazement. These magnetrons are jailers, killers, forcing innocent people to suffer and die behind bars for whatever feeble reason Maven gives them. They are following orders, yes, but choosing to follow them all the same. Come on, out you go. On your feet, time to take the dogs for a walk. The magnetron officers move in rapid succession, trotting to the first set of cells. They bodily drag new bloods from their cots, tossing the ones who can't get up fast enough out onto the catwalk. A little girl lands dangerously close to the edge, almost falling. She looks so much like Gisa. I take a step forward, and Kaloran has to yank me back. Not yet, he growls in my ear. Not yet. My hands clench, itching to let loose on the two officers as they get closer and closer to the door. They haven't seen us yet, but they certainly will. Cal is the first to remove his helmet. Samu stops short, as if shot. He blinks once, not believing his eyes. Before he can react, his feet leave the ground and he hurtles toward the ceiling. The other follows suit as his tenuous hold on gravity releases. Gareth bounces them both, smacking them against the concrete ceiling with sickening final crunches of bone. We flood into the cell block, moving as one, as fast as we can. I reach the fallen girl first, hauling her to her feet. She wheezes, her small body shivering, but the pressure of silent stone has fallen away, and some color returns to her pale, clammy cheeks. I remove my own mask. The Lightning Girl, she murmurs, touching my face. It breaks my heart. Part of me wants to pick her up and run, to take her away from all this. But our task is far from over, and I cannot leave, even for the little girl. So I put her down on shaky legs and pull my hand gently from her grasp. Follow us as best you can. Fight as best you can, I shout to the block. I make sure to lean over the edge of the catwalk so everyone can hear and see me. Far below, the few prisoners still alive in the low cells have already begun the climb up the metal steps. We are leaving this prison tonight, together and alive. By now I should know better than to lie. But a lie is what they need to carry on, and if my deceit saves even one of them, it is worth the cost to my soul. 26. Blind cameras can protect us for only so long, and that time has apparently run out. It starts with explosions back in the corridor. I hear Ketha screaming with every blast, frightened by what she's done and what she continues to do to flesh and bone. Each ragged cry shocks through the cell block, stilling the already slow new bloods. Keep moving, Farley barks. Her manic energy is gone, replaced by stern authority. Follow Ada! Follow Ada! She herds them like sheep, bodily pulling many of them up the stairs. Shade is more helpful, jumping the oldest and sickest up from the lowest levels, though it disorients most of them. Kaloran keeps them from stumbling off the catwalk, his long limbs coming in handy. Ada waves her arms, directing the new bloods to the door next to her. It has a big black C on it. With me, she shouts. Her eyes flicker over everything and everyone, counting. I have to push many of them toward her, though they're inexplicably drawn to me. At least the little girl gets the message. She toddles over to Ada and clings to her leg, trying to hide from the noise. Everything echoes horribly in the block, transformed into beast-like howls by the concrete walls and metal plating. Gunshots ring out next, followed by Nix's unmistakable laughter. But he won't be laughing long if this assault keeps up. Now comes the part I dread the most, the part I fought hardest against, but Cal was clear. We must split up. Cover more ground, free more prisoners, and most important, get them out safely. So I move through the throng of new bloods, fighting the tide, with Cameron next to me. She tosses the key over her shoulder, and Kaloran catches it deftly. He watches us go, not daring to blink. This might be the last time he ever sees me, and we both know it. Cal follows behind me. I feel his warmth from yards away. He burns the catwalk behind us, letting it melt, cutting us off from the others. When we reach the opposite door, the one marked Command, Cameron gets to work on the switch panel. I can do nothing but stare, glancing between Killorn and my brother, memorizing their faces. Kefa, Nyx, and Darmian run back into the block, sprinting from the onslaught they can no longer hold back. Bullets follow, pinging off metal in Nyx's flesh. Again, the world slows, and I wish it would stop entirely. I wish John were here to tell me what to do, to tell me I made the right choices, to tell me who dies. A hot, almost scalding hand takes my cheek, forcibly turning me away from the rest. "Focus," Cal says, glaring into my eyes. "Mare, you're going to have to forget them right now. Trust what you're doing." I can barely nod. I can barely speak. "Yes." Behind us, the cell block empties. Ahead, the switch sparks. The door slides open. Cal pushes us both through and I land hard on another tile floor. My body reacts before my mind can, and lightning sparks to life all around me. It shatters my thoughts of Killorn and Shade, until all that remains are the command center across the hall and what I must do. Just like Cameron said, it's a triangular room of impenetrable, rippled diamond glass, filled with control panels, monitoring screens, 6 bustling soldiers, and the same metal doors as the cells. 3 in all, 1 set in each wall. I run to the first, expecting it to open, expecting the command soldiers inside to rise to the occasion. To my surprise, they keep to their chairs and stations, watching me with wide, fearful eyes. I bang one fist on the door, enjoying the pain that shoots through my hand. "Open up!" I scream, like that can do anything. Instead, the soldier closest to me flinches, jumping back from the wall. He, too, has a captain's badge. "Don't!" he commands, holding out a hand to still his fellow officers. Overhead, a siren screams to life. "If that's the way they want it," Cal mutters, moving to the other door. A slam makes me jump, and I turn to see great granite blocks slide into place, replacing the metal door we just came through. Cameron smirks at the control panel, even patting it fondly. "That should buy us a few minutes." She gets to her feet, knees cracking. Her face sours at the sight of the command center. "Bleeding fools are scared," she growls, and makes a very rude hand gesture more suited to the alleys of the stilts. "Can we reach them through the glass?" In reply, I turn my gaze on the monitoring screens. They explode in rapid succession, showering the soldiers in a spray of sparks and broken glass. The siren screeches to a low whine, then cuts out. Every piece of metal inside the command room jumps with electricity, frying like eggs in a pan, making the soldiers cluster in the center of the room. One of them collapses, clutching his head in a gesture I now recognize. His body rocks in time with Cameron's clenching fist, fighting wave after wave of suffocating ability. Blood drips from his ears, nose, and mouth. It isn't long before he chokes on it. "Cameron!" Cal barks, but she pretends not to hear him. "Julian Jacobs!" I shout, banging on the glass again. "Sarah Skonos, where are they?" Another soldier drops, howling. "Cameron!" She shows no signs of stopping, not that she should. These people imprisoned her, tortured her, starved her, and would have killed her. Revenge is her right. My own lightning intensifies, bouncing inside the glass box, forcing the soldiers to cower from its purple-white wrath. Each bolt crackles and spits, blasting closer and closer to their flesh. "Mare, stop it!" Cal continues shouting, but I barely hear him. "Julian Jacobs! Sarah Sco—" The captain, now scrambling across the floor, throws himself at the wall in front of me. "Block G!" he screams, slapping his palm on the glass a few inches from my face. "They're in Block G! Through that door!" "That's it. Come on," Cal growls. Inside the command module, the captain's eyes flicker to his fallen prince. Cameron laughs high and clear. "You want to leave them alive? Do you know what they've done to us, to everyone here, your Silvers included? Please. Please, we were following orders, the king's orders," the captain pleads, ducking to avoid another arc of lightning. Behind him, Cameron's second victim curls into himself, succumbing to her silence. Tears cling to his lashes in crystal drops. Your Highness, I beg for mercy, your mercy. I think of the little girl in the cells. Her eyes were bloodshot, and I could feel her ribs through her clothes. I think of Gisa and her broken hand, the bled baby in Templin. Innocent children. I think of everything that's happened to me since this fateful summer, when a dead fisherman began all this trouble. No, it wasn't his fault. It was theirs. Their laws, their conscription, their doom for every single one of us. They did this. They have brought this ending upon themselves. Even now, when it is Cameron and me destroying them, they beg for Cal's mercy. They beg to a Silver King and spit upon Red Queens. I see the prince through the rippled glass. It distorts his face, and he looks so much like Maven. Mare. Cal whispers, if only to himself. But his whispers cannot stop me now. I feel something new inside myself, familiar but strange. A power that comes not from blood, but choice. From who I have become, and not what I was born as. I turn from Cal's warped image. I know I look just as twisted. I bare my teeth in a snarl. Lightning has no mercy. Once, I watched my brothers burn ants with a bit of glass. This is similar. And worse. While the individually sealed cell blocks make it difficult, almost impossible, for prisoners to escape, they also make it that much harder for the guards to communicate with each other. Confusion is as effective as lightning or flame. Guards are loath to leave their posts, especially with rumors of the king around, and we find four buzzing magnetrons arguing in Block G. You heard the siren. Something's wrong. Probably a drill showing off for the little king. I can't get command on the radio. You heard them before. Cameras are malfunctioning. The radios are going, too. Might be the queen messing around again. Bloody witch. I spear a bolt through one of them to get their attention. Wrong witch. Before the metal catwalk can drop beneath me, I grab onto the bars to the left of the door, holding fast. Cal goes to the right, and the bars turn red beneath his flaming touch, melting straight through. Cameron stays in the doorway, a light sheen of sweat across her brow, but she shows no signs of slowing down. One of the magnetrons topples from his retracting perch, clutching his head as he falls three levels to the concrete floor. It knocks him out cold. Two left. A hailstorm of jagged metal screams at me, each piece a tiny dagger meant to kill. Before they can, I let go, sliding down the bars until my feet hit the slight ledge of the cell below. Cal, a little help! I shout, dodging another blast. I answer it with my own, but the magnetron dips, stepping into what should be midair. Instead, his metal moves with him, allowing him to seemingly run through the open atrium. To my chagrin, Cal ignores me and pries away the melted bar of the cell. His back spikes with flame, protecting himself from any weapon the other magnetron can throw at him. I can barely see him through the twists of fire, but I see enough. He's horribly angry, and it's no mystery why. He hates me for killing those Silvers. For doing what he can't. I never thought I'd see the day when Cal, the soldier, the warrior, would fear to act. Now he focuses on opening as many cells as he can, ignoring my pleas for help, forcing me to fight alone. Cameron, drop him! I yell, glancing up at my unlikely ally. With pleasure, she snarls, extending a hand to the magnetron attacking me. He stumbles but doesn't fall. She's weakening. I scramble along the cells, toes almost slipping, fingers straining with every passing second. I'm a runner, not a climber, and I almost can't fight this way. Almost. A sharp, diamond-shaped razor grazes my cheek, opening a wound across my face. Another cuts my palm. When I grab the next bar, my grip is weak, slipping through my own blood. I fall the last 6 or 7 feet, landing hard in the bowels of the block. For a second, I can't breathe, and I open my eyes to see a gigantic spike whistling at my head. I roll, dodging the killing blow. Another and another rain down, and I have to zigzag across the floor to stay alive. Cal! I shout again, more angry than afraid. The next spike melts before it reaches me, but the iron globs splatter too close, burning across my back. A scream escapes me as the fabric of my suit melts into my scars. It's nearly the worst pain I've ever felt, second only to the sounder and the excruciating coma that followed. My knees slam into the ground, sending jolts of agony up my legs. Pain, it seems, is another one of my triggers. The skylight high above us shatters, and a bolt of lightning explodes down to me. For a split second, it's like a purple tree has grown up from the sub-level, branching and veining through the open atrium of Block G. It catches one of the magnetrons, and she doesn't even have time to scream. The other, the last guard, is all but finished, reduced to cowering on his last sheet of metal, curled up against Cameron's hammering will. "Julian!" I shout once the air clears. "Sarah!" Cal jumps down at the other end of the floor, his hands cupped around his mouth. He refuses to look at me, searching the cells instead. "Uncle Julian!" he roars. "I'll just wait up here," Cameron says, watching us from the open doorway at the top level. Her legs dangle. She even has the gall to whistle, eyeing the last magnetron as he moans. Block G is just as dank as the new blood D, and, thanks to me, half-destroyed. A hole smokes in the center of the floor, the only remnants of my massive bolt. From what I can see, the bottom cells are almost pitch black, but they're all full. A few prisoners have stumbled to their bars, coming to look at the commotion. How many faces will I recognize? But they're too drawn, too gaunt, their skin almost blue with fear, hunger, and cold. I doubt I'd recognize even Cal after a few weeks down here. I expected more for the Silvers, but I guess political prisoners are just as dangerous as secret mutated ones. "Here," a voice croaks. I nearly trip over a magnetron body, running even though the burns on my back protest with every step. Cal meets me there, his hands on fire, ready to melt the bars, to save his uncle, to make amends for some of his sins. The man in the cell looks weak, as old and frail as his beloved books. His skin has gone white, his remaining hair thin, and the lines on his face have multiplied and deepened. I think he's even missing teeth, but there's no mistaking his familiar brown eyes and the spark of intelligence still burning deep inside. "Julian, I can't get to him fast enough and hover almost too close to the melting metal. Julian, 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 my teacher, my friend." The first bar buckles, and Cal wrenches it away, creating a space big enough for me to slip through. I barely notice the suffocating pressure of silent stone, and focus instead on pulling Julian to his feet. He feels brittle, as if his bones might snap. And for a moment, I wonder if he'll get out of this alive. Then his grip on me tightens, and his brow furrows in concentration. "Bring me to that guard," he growls, betraying some of his old spirit. "And get Sarah out." "Of course, we're here for her too." I put his arm over my shoulder, helping him walk. Though he's much taller than me, he feels shockingly light. "We're here for everyone." When we get him outside the cell, Julian stumbles, but keeps his footing. "Cal," he mutters, reaching for his nephew. He takes his face in his hands and studies the exiled prince like he would an old book. "Things were done, weren't they?" "Yes, they were," Cal growls. He doesn't look my way. The cells changed what Julian looks like, but not who he is. He nods in understanding, looking very solemn. It comforts Cal in no small way. "Such thoughts have no place here and now. But after..." "After," Cal repeats. Finally, he turns his blazing eyes on me. I feel burned by them. "After. Come, Mare, help me to that festering lump." Julian points to the guard on the floor, unconscious but still living. "Let's see if I'm not totally useless." I do as I'm told, acting as Julian's crutch as he limps to the fallen officer. Meanwhile, Cal gets to work on Sarah's cell, located across the floor from Julian. Within sight and earshot, but too far away to touch, another small torture that they had to withstand. I've seen Julian do this before, but never with such effort or pain. His fingers shake as he pries open one of the officer's eyes, and he swallows many times trying to call forth the voice that he needs. The song. "It's all right, Julian. We can find another way." "Another way will get us killed, Mayor. Have I taught you nothing at all?" Despite the situation, I have to smile. I fight the urge to hug him and try to hide my grin. Finally, Julian exhales, eyes half shut. Veins stand out in his neck. Then his eyes snap open, wide and clear. "Wake!" he says in a voice more beautiful than sunset. Beneath us, the officer does as he's told, his other eye drifting open. "Open the cells, all of them." A twisting shriek echoes up and down the block as the bars of every single cell bow open in unison. "Build the stairs and walks, connect everything." Clang, clang, clang. Every shred of metal, the daggers, the electrocuted shards, even the melted drops flatten and reform, banging together in succession. "Walk with us." Julian's voice quivers in the last order, but the magnetron obeys, if a little slowly. "You're lucky you came today, Mayor," Julian says as I help him straighten. "They walked us yesterday. We are not so weak as we usually are." I debate telling Julian about John, his ability, his advice. Julian will love hearing about him. After, I tell myself, after. For the first time I have hope. There will be an after. Chaos descends on Koros. Gunfire echoes in every corridor. Behind every door, the ragged band of Silvers follows us weakly, but a few have the strength to complain. I don't trust them at all, and almost walk backward to keep watch. Many branch off, slipping around corners, eager to be rid of this place. Others go deeper into the prison, looking for revenge. A few stay with us, their eyes downcast, ashamed to follow the Lightning Girl. But still they follow, and they fight as best they can. It's like dropping a stone in a still pond. The ripples start small, but they certainly grow. Each block falls more easily than the last, until the magnetrons inside must run from us. The Silvers kill more than I do, falling on their betrayers like hungry wolves. But even this cannot last. When a Larolan Oblivion blasts away a stone barrier, opening block J to us, the debris falls not down, but up. And before I understand what's happening, I'm being sucked into a whirlwind of smoke, shards, and unearthly whispers. Cameron grabs at my hand, but she slips from my grasp, disappearing into what must be mist. A nymph. I can't see anything but shadows in gloomy yellow light, each one like a distant, hazy sun. Before I can fall into such oblivion, I reach out, grabbing for anything. My cut hand closes on a cold, limp leg, stopping me with a bone-rattling jolt. "Cal!" I shout, but the howl swallows up my voice. Grunting, I pull myself up the leg. It must belong to a corpse because it isn't moving. Cold fear tears at my mind, reaching with icy, sharp fingers. I almost let go, not wanting to see the face that belongs to this body. It could be anyone, it could be everyone. It's wrong to feel relieved, but I do. I don't recognize the man tangled in the bars of his cell, one leg wrapped, the other still dangling. He's certainly a prisoner, but I don't know him, and I won't mourn him. My back feels nearly split open by scars and burns, and for a second I allow myself to lean back against the bars. The gravity in this block has shifted. Gareth is here, which means Killorn, Shade, and Farley are not far behind. They're supposed to be on the other side of the prison, emptying the far cell blocks. Something has forced them in. Or trapped them entirely. Before I can call out, I'm falling again, as the block seems to spin. But it's not the cells that are moving. It's gravity itself. "Gareth! Stop!" I shout into the void. No one answers. At least, no one I want to hear. Little Lightning Girl. Her voice almost splits my skull in two. Queen Elara. This time I wish for the sounder device. I wish for something to kill me, to give me the safety of death. I am still falling. Perhaps that will do it. Maybe I'll die before she wriggles into my brain and turns me loose on everything and everyone I care about. But I feel the tendrils in my mind already taking hold. My fingers twitch at her command, and sparks jump between them. No, please no. I hit the other side of the block hard, probably breaking my arm, but I feel no pain. She takes it away. With one last ragged scream, I do what I must and use the last drops of my own free will to slip between the twisted bars beneath me into the prison of silent stone. It shatters my ability and hers. The sparks die, her control breaks, and blinding pain sears through my left arm and up into my shoulder. I laugh through my tears. How fitting. She built this prison to hurt me and the other new bloods. Now it's the only thing stopping her from doing just that. Now, it is my last sanctuary. From my place on the back wall of the cell, I guess it's the floor now, I watch the mist dance. The gunfire slows, either because bullets are running low, or it's impossible to aim in such terrible visibility. A curling snake of flame blazes by, and I expect to see Cal follow, but his shape never appears. I call for him anyway. Cal! But my voice is weak. The stone that saved me is taking hold. It presses like a weight against my neck. She doesn't take long to find me. Her boots edge the bars of my cage, and for a second I think I must be hallucinating. This is not the glittering, glorious queen I remember. Gone are her dresses and jewels, replaced by a neat, navy blue uniform with white detailing. Even her hair, usually perfectly curled and braided, has been slicked back into a simple bun. When I see gray at her temples, I laugh again. "The first time we met, you were in a cell just like this," she muses, stooping so she can see me better. "Bars did not stop me then, and they will not stop me now." "Come in, then," I tell her, spitting blood, definitely missing a tooth. "Still the same girl you were. I thought the world would change you, but instead..." She tips her head, smiling like a cat. "You changed a little bit of the world. If you give me your hand, you can change even more." I can barely breathe through my laughter. How stupid do you think I am? Keep her talking, keep her distracted. Someone will see her soon, someone must. "Have it your way, then." She sighs, standing. She gestures to someone I can't see. Guards, I realize, with a hollow, sinking resignation. Her hand reappears with a pistol, her finger already on the trigger. "I would have liked to be in your head once again. You have such lovely delusions." A small victory, I think, shutting my eyes. She will never have the lightning, and she will never have me. A victory indeed. Again, I feel myself falling. But instead of the bullet, the bars smack against my face. I open my eyes in time to see Ilara sailing away from me, the gun spilling from her hand, a look of terrible anger twisting her beautiful face. Her guards scatter with her, disappearing into the yellowed clouds. And someone grabs my good arm, pulling me to him. "Come on, Mare, I can't get you through on my own," Shade says, trying to ease me through the bars. Breathless, I squeeze, pulling as much of myself as I can through. I guess it's enough, because suddenly the world shrinks, the mist disappears, and I open my eyes to see blinding white tile. I almost collapse with joy when I see Sarah sprinting toward me, her hands outstretched, with Killorn and Julian on her heels. I really do. Someone else catches me, someone warm. He turns me on my side, and I hiss when my arm catches a bit of the pressure. "Arm first, then burns, then scars," Cal says, all business. I can't help but moan when Sarah touches me, and a blissful numbing spreads through my arm. Something cool hits my back, healing the burns, which were certainly infected. But before the healing can spread to my ugly, gnarled scars, I'm pulled to my feet and out of Sarah's control. The door at the end of the corridor explodes outward, broken apart by rapidly growing twists of tree trunk. The mist follows, spinning toward us at great speed. The shadows come last. I know who they belong to. Cal throws a blast of fire at the oncoming branches, burning them back, but the charred embers simply join the roaring whirlwind. "Cameron!" I yell, craning my head to look for the one person who can stop Ilara. But she's nowhere to be found. "She's already out, now go!" Killorn yells at me, pushing me ahead. I know I'm what Ilara wants. Not only for my ability, but for my face. If she can control me, she can use me as a mouthpiece again, to lie to the country, to do as she says. That's why I run faster than the others. I have always been the fast one. When I look back over my shoulder, I'm yards ahead, and what I see chills me. Cal has to forcibly pull Julian along, not because he's weak, but because he keeps trying to stop. He wants to face her. He wants to pit his voice against her mind, against her whispers, to avenge a dead sister, a wounded love, a broken and torn apart pride. But Cal won't lose the last piece of family he has left, and all but drags Julian away. Sarah keeps close to Julian's side, one hand in his, unable to scream in fear. Then, I turn the corner and I hit something. No, someone. Another woman, another person I never wanted to see again. Ara, the panther, the head of House Eral, glares at me with eyes black as coal. Her fingers are still tinged gray-blue by silent stone, and her clothes are tattered rags, but her strength is already returning, evidenced by the pure steel in her gaze. No way around but through. I raise my lightning to kill her, another one who knew I was different all along. She reacts before I can, grabbing my shoulders with agility no human should possess. But instead of breaking my neck or slitting my throat, she tosses me sideways and something ruffles my hair. A curved spinning blade, sharp as a razor, big as a dinner plate, flies past my face, centimeters from my nose. I hit the ground, gasping in shock, clutching at the head I almost lost. And above me, Ara Eral stands her ground, dodging every blade that sails over us. They're coming from the opposite end of the hall, where another person from the past stands, forming metal discs from the plates of his familiar scale armor. "Didn't your father ever teach you respect for your elders?" Ara crows at Ptolemus, stepping neatly under another blade. The next one she pulls out of the air and tosses it back at him, an impressive but useless trick, as he waves it off with a curled smirk. "Well, Red, aren't you going to do something?" she adds, towing my leg. I stare at her, stunned for a moment. Then I clamber to my feet, forcing myself to stand. A little bit of my terror disappears. "With pleasure, my lady." At the end of the corridor, Ptolemus's grin widens. "Now to finish what my sister started in the arena," he growls. "What your sister ran from," I call back, directing a bolt at his head. He throws himself sideways against the wall, and in the time it takes him to recover, Ara closes the distance between them and leaps, kicking off the tile wall. Using the momentum, she breaks Ptolemus's jaw with her elbow. I follow, and judging by the pounding footsteps behind me, I'm not the only one. Fire and lightning, mist and wind, metal rain, curling darkness, explosions like tiny stars, and bullets, always bullets, close behind. We move forward through the battle storm, praying for an end to this prison, following the map we all did our best to memorize. It should be here. No, here. No, here. In the mist and shadows, it's easy to get lost. And then there's Gareth, always spinning the bounds of gravity, sometimes doing more harm than good. When we finally find the entrance hall, the room with red and silver and black doors, I'm bruised all over again and my strength is fading fast. I don't even want to think about the others, Julian and Sarah, who could barely walk earlier. We need to get in the open, to the sky, to the lightning that can save us all. Outside, the sun has risen. Ara and Ptolemus continue their visceral dance as the wash looms, a great haze on the horizon. I only have eyes for the Black Run and the other jet idling on the runway. A crowd swarms around the crafts, new blood and silver alike, boarding everything within reach. Some disappear into the fields, hoping to escape on foot. "Shade, get him to the jets!" I yell, grabbing Cal by the collar as we run. Before he can protest, Shade does as instructed and jumps him 100 yards away. I can always count on Shade to understand. Cal is one of our only two pilots. He cannot die here, not when we're so close to getting away. We need him to fly and fly well. A split second later, Shade returns, wrapping his arms around Julian and Sarah. They disappear with him, and I breathe a small sigh of relief. I call on everything I have left, down to the deepness of my bones. It makes me slow, makes me weak, taking my will and turning it into something stronger. To my delight, the sky darkens. Killorn stops next to me, his rifle tucked against his shoulder. He shoots with precision, picking off our pursuers one by one. Many men step in front of the Queen, protecting her, whether by their own volition or hers. She'll be within range soon, of both my ability and her own. I have only one chance. It happens in slow motion. I glance at the two silvers locked in battle between me and the jets. A long, thin blade, like a giant needle, cuts through Ara's neck, spilling a silver fountain. Ptolemy spins with the momentum, directing it through her, at me. I move to duck, expecting what I think is the worst. I can't possibly see what's coming. Only one person could. John. He walked away from all this. He let this happen. He didn't want to warn us. He didn't care. Shade appears in front of me, intending to take me away from all this. Instead, he gets a cruel, gleaming needle through his heart. He doesn't realize what's happening. He doesn't feel any pain. He dies before his knees hit the ground. I don't remember anything else until we're in the air. My face runs with tears, but I can't wipe them away. I stare at my hands, painted in both colors of blood. 27. This is not the Black Run. Instead, Cal pilots a massive cargo jet built to carry heavy transports or machinery. Now the cargo bay holds over 300 escaped prisoners, many injured, all shell-shocked. Most are new bloods, but there are also silvers among them, keeping to themselves, biding their time. For today, at least, they all look the same, cloaked in rags, exhaustion, and hunger. I don't want to go down to them, so I stick to the upper level of the jet. At least it's quiet in this section, separated from the bay by a narrow stairwell, and from the cockpit by a closed door. I can't make myself move past the two bodies at my feet. One lies beneath a white sheet, stained only by the blossom of red blood over his pierced heart. Farley kneels over him, frozen, a hand under the sheet to clutch my brother's cold, dead fingers. The other corpse I refuse to cover. Ilara looks ugly in death. Lightning twisted her muscles, pulling her mouth into a sneer even she couldn't muster while alive. Her simple uniform is cooked to her skin, and her ash-blonde hair is almost gone, burned away until only stringy patches remain. The other bodies, her guards, were just as deformed. We left them rotting on the runway, but the Queen is still unmistakable. Everyone will know this corpse. I'll make sure of it. You should go lie down. The body unsettles Killorn, that much is clear. I don't know why. We should be dancing on her bones. Let Sarah check you out. Tell Cal to change course. He blinks at me, perplexed. Change course? What are you talking about? We're going back to the Notch, back home. Home. I scoff at such a childish word. We're going back to Tuck. Tell him, please. Mayor, please. He doesn't move. Have you gone crazy? Do you remember what happened back there, what the Colonel will do to you if you come back? Crazy. I wish. I wish my mind would snap from the torture my life has become. That would be such a relief, to simply go mad. He can certainly try, but there are too many of us now, even for him. And when he sees what I bring him, I doubt he'll refuse us this time. The body? He breathes, visibly shaking. It's not the corpse scaring him. I realize quietly, it's me. You're going to show him the body? I'm going to show everyone. Again, firmer. Tell Cal to change course. He will understand. The jab stings Killorn, but I don't care. He hardens, drawing back to do as I tell him. The cockpit door shuts behind him, but I barely notice. I'm preoccupied with more important things than petty insults. Who is he to question my orders? He's no one. A fish boy, with only good luck and my foolishness to protect him. Not like Shade, a teleporter, a new blood, a great man. How can he be dead? And he is not the only one. No, there are certainly others left to make the prison their tomb. We'll only know when we land and can see who else escaped on the Black Run. And we will be landing on the island compound, not trekking to some lonely backwoods cave. Did your seer tell you about this? The first words Farley's spoken since we left Koros. She hasn't wept yet, but her voice sounds horrible.